Good to have you here, Olaf. It feels like 2021 again. If you were looking at Bitcoin prices this morning like I was, Bitcoin hit more than 60K. It was at 63 a little bit this morning. And it's kind of an interesting time to chat about the bull case for crypto in 2024. And given that you're someone who's seen a ton of different cycles, you know, you've been in this industry for a while, what exactly are you most excited about? What do you think is driving some of this excitement right now?
Yeah, so, you know, I got into crypto in 2011 and have been full-time ever since then. Polychain, my firm, we've been full-time early-stage investors in crypto for almost 8 years now. Candidly, these cycles often feel quite similar thematically, where there's sort of a lot of media attention that drives in huge amount of like new users, new capital, etc. And then, you know, sort of a, you know, blow off due to just too much attention, too much capital, etc. The main thing for me is that prices in crypto are very uncorrelated with the development cycles and sort of speed of development of like new technologies, which tends to compound at just a pretty steady rate. Like that chart is actually not that volatile. You overlay that on the price chart, you know, it's obviously an extremely volatile asset class. So it's always felt like the most important stuff sort of gets built very quietly in the down markets when very few people are paying attention. This is sort of when we're doing all the hard work of actually getting these new technologies developed and finding new investments, you know, from mostly like inventors, right? It's often the type of person we're looking for. Then, you know, these things launch, they enable new types of activity, new use cases. You know, early days, it was just Bitcoin. We just sort of had electronic gold. You know, with things like Ethereum, we got the ability to do decentralized financial instruments, stable coins, NFTs, etc. And now there's a whole new wave of technologies that have sort of emerged over just the last couple of years that I think are once again, you know, going to enable this kind of new suite of new use cases that, again, to drive in a new set of users.
I'm intrigued about what you said about developers, because I was reading the Electric Capital Developer Report, and they had said that in 2023, developers in the crypto ecosystem declined by about a fourth. And I'm wondering what you think of that and whether, you know, it just doesn't seem to square up for me with, you know, all the recent enthusiasm, but then also developers are leaving the ecosystem. How are you making sense of it?
I mean, I would put it on a log scale and zoom out and draw like a multi-year trend line. You know, the activity in crypto is always volatile, but if you zoom out, it's actually in one direction only. You know, I do think that entrepreneurs and developers, you know, are smart and opportunistic about where they want to build. And if they're profit motivated, they often go where they feel capital markets are going. So in general, though, those folks, I think, are not as great of builders or investors because they're a little bit more mercenary, so to speak, or profit motivated than sort of missionary entrepreneurs that really care about what they're building outside of kind of financial outcomes, right? Like, why is Elon Musk trying to build SpaceX? Is he trying to make more money? No, he's trying to go to Mars, right? So, you know, I think that the highest quality developers are the ones who are, you know, very mission focused and tend to stick around and not sort of follow the trend so much.
Got it. And you mentioned that, you know, all these cycles have similar themes that you've seen, but what was different about the crypto winter that we most recently saw? Are there any lessons or takeaways that are different from what you've seen in the past?
Honestly, it was the easiest one.
Wow.
Yeah, for sure. It was the least existential. I think the sort of, you know, nobody remembers, but in 2012 bear market was just like this thing never even existed. The 2014-15 bear market was very existential. Like, is this a thing or is this not a thing at all? You know, and then the prior one to this was just quite like bigger crash. You know, it just felt like, again, there was less infrastructure in place, less institutional buy-in, less regulatory clarity. You know, all these things like at the bottoms have just been better every time. So to me, this one was sort of the easiest. I think quantitatively, it was sort of like the least bad crashes and, you know, in general, just more institutional buy-in, more, regulatory clarity, more clear use cases. And at this point, you know, I think there's no longer this question of like, should crypto be worth anything at all? right? Which was a question that for the first, you know, 5 years I spent in this category, that was the question. It was like, why should a Bitcoin be worth $1 instead of $0? At this point, you know, regardless of why you think it's worth something, it clearly is, right? And now the question is just how big, how fast, what can it do?
Yeah, I want to hear your take on that, because I do think a lot of people, to be fair, still do have that question. I mean, I get asked that all the time, even when I'm, you know, pitching stories and things like that. So in 3 sentences or less, can you tell me why you have, what is your bull case for crypto in 2024?
Yeah, so I think the simplest way to, there's kind of 3 layers of bull case. One is, this is just electronic gold, and it's better than gold, and it serves a very similar purpose as gold, as being sort of politically neutral, not sponsored by a company or nation state or geography, and being sort of tradable globally. That would put each Bitcoin at something like $700,000, if that's the only thing you think this will ever do. If you think that layering on things like stablecoins, financial instruments that are immutable, open source software, and you know anybody in the world can participate in, or the idea of novel assets and asset issuance being sort of democratized globally. So anybody in the world can go launch their new asset or launch their new financial product. It's not limited to these sort of gatekeepers the way it has been in the past. It's sort of anyone with a mobile phone, anyone with an internet connection. If you think there's any value there, it's once again sort of an order of magnitude bigger than just gold, because it's sort of gold and money and finance, in a sense. And then I think the bigger bull case is that there are mainstream applications uniquely enabled by blockchains that are outside of just financial instruments, but have more to do with things like digital identity, digital credit scoring, you know, and sort of global crowdfunding, you know, anything that you can sort of define with software logic, you can embed in a blockchain system. So there's really no limit to what you can put inside these things in theory. Getting there from a scalability perspective is one of the big things me and my team spend time on.
It's a little more than 3 sentences, but I'll let it slide. I think you gave a pretty
three bullet
simple
points.
Answer. Fair enough. So I am curious about at Polychain, where are you seeing those biggest pockets of opportunity within crypto these days? I mean, crypto VCs invest in so many different things. So maybe a little overview of like where within crypto you're spending your time would be helpful.
You know, I've always focused on one area since the beginning. It's early stage venture focused on sort of infrastructure and protocol. So this is the lowest level stuff there is. Most of it is systems for developers to build new behaviors on. So again, going back to Ethereum, which I think everybody is familiar with, it's not really a consumer product per se, nor is it like a B2B product. It's really a platform for developers to build consumer and business products on. So those sort of low level technologies are the main focus for me. They always have been. A lot of that is getting very in the weeds on, you know, each of the sort of technical pillars that go into building one of these systems, you know, cryptography, distributed systems, peer-to-peer networks, game theory and mechanism design, and sort of understanding where there's a breakthrough in one or more of those categories that sort of leads to a new technology being possible that enables like these new behaviors that weren't possible before. That's always been my category. It continues to be. I think there's a huge amount of opportunity here. The infrastructure is just not done. Until I can confidently say this system can host the global system of property ownership, money, and trade, right, in one unified global software system that, you know, not only has to withstand the current amount of sort of financial interactions happening globally, but actually because of its unique characteristics, it will actually dramatically increase the number of financial transactions happening. So things like streaming payments or micropayments are all going to be enabled by this. The scalability story is, you know, far from over. We have a lot of work to do, and we made dramatic progress, but I think it just continues to be a great category. I've talked about that category since the beginning, but like until we have these systems that are capable of what I just said, we're not done.
So how do you think about how you actually invest? Like, are you investing a lot in tokens? Are you taking equity, you know, in the more traditional VC sense?
Yeah. So our specialty, in a sense, is these protocol systems, which tend to be, you know, tokenized networks. So what we're buying from a deal structuring perspective is an equity stake in some sort of holding company that is tied to like a token warrant, where we can exercise that warrant to receive tokens. So it's sort of like pre-purchasing tokens before the token system exists. That's sort of the core thing that Polychain was set up to do from the beginning. It continues to be the main thing we do. So then when the sort of cryptocurrency network launches, we receive at that launch moment a piece of the tokens in the system. That, you know, has always been the way we invest as like the main category. We do also, of course, invest in traditional equity, kind of revenue generating businesses. But the way to think about those protocol systems is they're really networks. They're not businesses, right? There's no Bitcoin Inc. sitting behind Bitcoin that generates revenue. You're really just buying Bitcoins, this sort of commodity style asset.
Right. Why are there so many protocols? And do you think that there needs to be so many?
Because people are trying to enable new types of behavior. So, you know, the reason why we have all these things like stablecoins, decentralized financial contracts, built on systems like Ethereum or other systems is for real reasons, like technical reasons. You can't build these things on Bitcoin in the same way. And, you know, every time one of these new platforms launch, I think a lot of people think about these things like it's just another ticker, right? And like, why are there so many tickers? But the reality is that each of these things have real trade-offs around scalability, security, usability, you know, developer expressibility, how can developers interact with these systems? And it's an open source entrepreneurial marketplace that's totally global. So anybody in the world with a computer can go say, I'm going to go launch a crypto asset. And that's why there's so many. That's like the beauty of the whole thing. It's sort of like anybody can go build a website. Anybody can start an Instagram page. And that democratization leads to a huge amount of chaos. But it also means that net, the whole thing moves forward faster than, you know, any other type of design.
I'm curious if you think that crypto should or will reach mass adoption, or are you sort of investing around, you know, very passionate group of people who are more crypto native?
Oh, definitely mass adoption. I mean, I really do believe that global systems of property ownership and the financial instruments that allow for trade of that property, this includes money as well as like every type of property you could imagine, I think will be hosted on these blockchain software systems. So it's, I think a lot of people that have like a technology investing lens don't really understand how big this is if a person like me is right. You know, Apple is a really big company. They make all these products we love. We're talking about money. And like if you invented a new money that became the new standard for value, it's so much bigger than an individual company with a set of kind of products could ever be.
What do you think is going to be the next catalyst that brings that forward? I mean, we saw, I guess, in this past cycle, we've seen, you know, the Bitcoin ETFs being launched. We've seen some markers of these more traditional companies integrating crypto. What is going to be the next big thing that gets more of those institutions on board?
Yeah. So, I mean, when it comes to those institutions, I think it is a lot of these access and liquidity products. So things like the ETF, you know, and anything that sort of allows regular people to use traditional investment channels to gain access to cryptocurrency. So they're maybe used to logging in Fidelity or calling their broker. They don't want to go set up some bespoke wallet and everything just to invest in this one thing, especially if they're trying to put, you know, 1% of their portfolio into this. So those things obviously lead to sort of capital flows. But the engine underneath it all that I care about is really enabling these new types of human behaviors, right? So, you know, this kind of global crowdfunding, things like digital art in this kind of NFT landscape, you know, early iterations of sort of portable digital identity that's cross-platform. So you can have your sort of little NFT identity, but actually use that on Instagram, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. it's sort of the first, iteration of this sort of internet sovereign identity. There's a lot of stuff we've invested in around capital efficiency with staking systems. So restaking systems like EigenLayer, scalable transaction and smart contract execution systems like Arbitrum. And then there's more scalable systems like Celestia, say, which recently launched. These are all sort of the categories that I don't have the answer to everything that will be built with them, but I know that they allow developers to express mathematical and software logic in new ways. And so anytime you sort of unlock a new way for people to express things, new things get built. And it's often quite hard to predict. If you asked the Ethereum developers when they were designing Ethereum in 2014, what will this enable? They would have had some ideas. Some basic ones would have been like, this is a multi-asset blockchain. We don't just have Bitcoins. We sort of have this ability to have other assets. But they could never have predicted all of the myriad of like bizarro applications that have been built on Ethereum. And so for me, I care more about enabling developers than I care about trying to predict, 10 years out, every single type of application that it will enable.
Given that you have been in the space for a while, I would love to hear if you have any particular success story in terms of an underlying tech platform or protocol that you invested in that then reached sort of critical mass and is still popular. I mean, I think about NFTs and like, they're still a thing, but demand, transactions, volume, all of that has declined a bit in the past year. So I'm wondering if you have like a lasting example of a consumer product that resonated with you.
Bitcoin as sort of a money or wealth preservation product, I think is at this point niche mainstream, right? I don't think it's like done, but I think it's very clear there's product market fit. Let's put it that way. And the question is, how big can it get? I think once you get people onboarded to that, the next step is, okay, well, I'm inside this big system. Let's say I want to borrow money. Now you can use a decentralized financial contract that's, again, open access, open source, auditable, and not operated by any sort of company or jurisdiction. It's like this automated piece of software where you can collateralize Bitcoin and borrow capital against it, sort of like you would with a mortgage or something like that. And it's just like this rabbit hole where you start to realize, okay, it begins with this investment use case, and then you move on to sort of this financial use case, and then it starts to get more exotic, like human coordination around crowdfunding, where you say, you know what, I need to actually raise capital. And could I do that through like again, open access global crowdfunding system? I want community management that's not who's loudest on the forums, but a more formal system. Could I use a token voting system to govern some sort of online system? So I do think that, the sort of investment like e-gold case, I would say is the only thing that has crossed into clear, visible, global product market fit. I think everything else sort of rolls down from there and depends in a sense on that first use case working in some capacity. Because why would you use financial instrument for crypto assets if crypto assets aren't worth anything, right?
Yeah, and you said global, and I think that's a really important point to like stick on for a second, because I hear so much, concern and talk about US regulation and what is the SEC going to do next? And that seems to always be the thing that's on the top of people's minds when they think about crypto. Do you think that assuming, crypto regulation in the US gets really severe, continues in its current trajectory, does crypto need the US to flourish?
So the question about, regulatory certainty, I've had this question for over 10 years, right? When regulators like first
been noticed waiting a while.
This existed. And I just think in general, there's a pretty wide gap between what I view as the reality and sort of the coverage. I just think in general, there is more acceptance. Years ago, we thought, this might just get banned Bitcoin,
right?
Which you can't mechanically, it's very, very hard to do. But you could just say it and see what happens. I think, you know, risks like that are no longer present whatsoever, right? I think that, tighter regulation of companies like Coinbase say that, you know, they've been very, a very regulated financial institution since I worked there back in 2013. So I really don't, I think there's a little bit of a story of this being like this unregulated Wild West. The reality is, I think the financial services platforms are very regulated, you know, using existing AML frameworks, using existing securities frameworks, et cetera. Now, to address your second point, this is global, and at the end of the day, it does not depend on any geography to work. And there is an interesting game theory that sort of the last adopter sort of makes the least. So I do think there's sort of a global competition in a sense. I think this is understated how important it is for your country to not lose if it's as big as a person like me thinks it's going to be.
I want to ask what you think is one or two of the biggest misconceptions that people have today, particularly in the tech community, the broader venture ecosystem, about crypto venture and what you do.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions is just the size of the opportunity. When I look at just the financials behind so much of what we've done over so many years, it may sound, and it is relative to a lot of, like say consumer tech investing, it's more technically complex, it's a bit more esoteric. A lot of the assets that we're investing in, you have to actually deal with the asset. Like you have to receive it, custody it, you know, you might have to participate in a network system. Like it's not just a stock certificate, right? It's actually like a piece of software that you have to sort of run and manage. I've been continually surprised at people not realizing how big the opportunity is here. And I don't mean looking forward. I mean, just look at what it has been over the last 10 years. It's still atypical for generalist venture funds to sort of invest in crypto. And generally, if they have, they've done it like just at the wrong times because they felt like they had to.
Well, it seems like we're starting another bull market. So we'll see if there's an influx of new VCs and everybody trying to get back into crypto like it's 2021. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.